Best Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Discover our commitment to our clients. At Life and Legacy, building wealth, securing your family's future, giving back, and creating a lasting legacy are not just values, but a way of life. Let us guide you toward a future aligned with what matters most to you. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as the key to unlock your workforce. Now here's your hosts, Robin Bailey and Al McDonald.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, back at it again with my co-host, Al McDonald. Al, how's your day going so far?
Day's going great. Of course, every podcast Friday is great. I get to meet a lot of great people. Today will be no exception. And yeah, I always look forward to, you know, learning some new things and getting to meet some new people. So very excited.
Yeah, always have a lot of fun. Well, today we're thrilled to welcome Nora Beatty, VP of Operations at Cohere. I'm sure everyone of our listeners is aware, but just in case, Cohere is the leading security-first enterprise AI company. They build cutting-edge foundation AI models and end-to-end products designed to solve real-world business problems. Nora, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I'll let the audience know, we met Nora at Tech Talent North. You were on a panel. It was such an interesting chat. I waited in line, actually, truth be told, to meet you and give you our little coaster. We were giving out coasters that day and you had fun with it. So I really appreciate you joining us. Where I'd love to start this conversation is with your career and kind of lead up to where you are now, because I think you've had a unique career journey. So perhaps you can take us back in time and, you know, what first sparked your interest in people ops and then what led you to your current role at an AI company like Cohere?
Yeah, for sure. So my original, I think, interest came from my mom, who's actually a recruiter. I had gone to school for philosophy and avoided growing up by doing a master's and then realized I still had to get a job when I got out. And my mom was really good at her job. She seemed really happy. And whatever, I was like young and had no experience. So my first job came through a connection. And she introduced me to Susan Mabardi, who was running people, or rather the talent side. It was more on the recruiting side at Eloqua. And we really hit it off. She'd been looking for a coordinator for some time and we really hit it off. And that was kind of the very beginning. I started at Eloqua 3 days after I got married. So I got married on a Friday and then the day I started at Eloqua. And 2 weeks after that, Oracle had bought us.
Wow.
So my stint at Eloqua was very, very short, but it was fortuitous timing. The person in my coordinator role at Oracle was going on parental leave. And so they were like, ah, she's here. You know, we don't have to do a search. Let's take this woman on. And thus began my foray into more traditional or formal HR. So I moved away from the recruiting side. This was very much like an HR business partner coordinator position. And really my first glimpse into any form of HR, because by the time I joined Eloqua, we were very much focused on the acquisition activity. So there was nothing kind of normal about my experience there. Oracle was HR, like it was like traditional old school HR. I lasted about, and I really mean lasted, like it was not I stayed, I lasted, I persevered for 2.5 years or so at Oracle. And I think it was a great place to kind of cut my teeth. I got to see at scale HR, I got to see the challenges, the ways in which, you know, a group within a company that size can have impact. And I think it lit a fire in me to think about like what more I wanted from the role. And so an opportunity came to join what was then one of the few startups in Toronto, FreshBooks, which is founded by Mike McDermott, who is a really unique thinker. I think he was way ahead of the curve on a lot of the ways he thought about building a company. And I would say that's where I really got to see like the possibility of an HR function. And I think my passion for the role and the impact that it could have started to grow. they weren't doing HR in a traditional way at all, right? Like, it was completely different. I met incredible people there. Penny Farina, who I think you guys have had on.
Oh, Penny. Yes. Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
Like, I mean, I think about her once a week at least, like some lesson that she taught me in my time there. I think she's an incredible HR leader.
She is.
Tracy Makita, who is, I think, still at Vena Solutions. Just some really great HR kind of thinkers. And I just feel like very grateful to them because I think they spent a lot of time mentoring me and showing me the possibilities and teaching me, somebody who had literally no experience beyond Oracle at that point. They spent a lot of time with me. And then as people started moving on, Mike took risks and gave me opportunities that were definitely a class above. And I grew a lot there. At some point, I left FreshBooks. It was just time for the next thing. And I joined Leak for a very short period. I think it wasn't necessarily the right role for me. They needed somebody with way more experience than I had to do something kind of bigger, but it was great. I think there was a lot of learnings. And again, I got to meet some really interesting people. While I was there, I met Jamie Schulman and Jamie McDonald, who had started this company called HubDoc, which was back in the cloud accounting space, same as FreshBooks. And Penny actually introduced us. I think they had reached out to her and she said she wasn't interested, but she knew this person who might be, which was me. And I really hit it off with the Jamies. That was like a really career-defining opportunity for me, is working at HubDoc. I was the first like formal HR hire that they brought on. They were experienced builders of companies who were extremely passionate about building a great career opportunity. For those who don't know about the Jamies, Jamie McDonald came from, he was like in the early team of Expedia. He was in the spinoff that built out Expedia. And the way he talks about it is like, that was the best job I'd ever had. It was the best moment in my career. And he just wants to do that for other people. So every company that he builds, everybody that works there, he wants them to look back and say, this was the best moment in my career. And it was, I think, for many people who work there, we're all still in touch. Like I work with some of the people that I worked with there. I'm still very much in touch with those two. And on top of all of that, it was an incredible, like, company opportunity because we were acquired by Xero a little while after I joined. I found out I was pregnant and then we were getting acquired. And that was incredible. It was so like exhilarating and difficult and all of those things. A bunch of us transitioned over to Xero. We stayed there for some time and just tried to help the company HubDoc settle into our place within Xero. But I knew like early on that I wanted to go back to startup. Like I wasn't going to stay. I love startups. I love the building. I love the creativity and the constraints. I love all of that. And so after 18 months, I was like, I'm cooked. Like I was trying for another kid and I was just cooked. So I took a break. I worked with this company called Commonwealth in Toronto for a little bit.
I know Commonwealth. Yeah.
Yeah. Great founders. Really, really interesting idea. But I think we knew from the beginning it was going to be a contract position just while I was pregnant. Went on leave and then started to think about, okay, like what's really the next thing here? And that was when I met Aiden. And AI hadn't really broken through yet. It was this pre-chat GPT by a half year or so. But I knew, you know, there was something like about it. Obviously, it was up and coming, but the breakthrough into sort of like normal culture hadn't happened yet. It was something about Aiden, like meeting him and his other two co-founders, Ivan and Nick, it's just something clicked. It felt like when I met the Jamies, I thought they were incredible. I thought that the opportunity was exciting. The stage of the company was perfect for me. We were 40 people when I joined. I was the first HR hire and I could not have known what was to come. And so I've been at Cohere for 3.5 years now. 40 people back then, 450 or something today.
Wow.
Still growing. Just what an exciting, like truly a rocket ship. You know, I think people use that term loosely. Like, no, I'm on it. Like, let me tell you, I haven't been on one before. This is completely different. Working at a company that's building something so bleeding edge, it feels like nothing I've ever done before. It feels like it's just, yeah, every day is like full of excitement and challenge and reward.
Yeah, you can't tell there's any excitement here, Nora, at all, by the way. The energy, oh my gosh, I'm going to feel... This is our last podcast of the day. I'm leaving on a high note. I love this. So all those names that you went through, I know one of them, and that's Penny Farina. And oh my gosh, I love Penny Farina. She's amazing. But I don't know all those other great people. So let's chat after this, because I think some introductions are in order, because they sound like they have awesome stories too. So I'd love to hear them.
There's many that I didn't mention. So like I could give you a long list of.
We'll chat for sure. I did want to ask you though, because you started in HR and, you know, what we would call traditional HR, and then you moved on. And I noticed a theme, by the way, because you were getting married and then you were acquired and then you're getting pregnant and you're getting acquired. So I'm not sure if there's something going on there, but where I was going to go with that was I'd love for you to talk about the transition, because your title is VP of Operations. And you see people going down the path of VP of People or VP or Chief People Officer, but you are VP of Operations. Can you maybe talk about the difference that you see? Is that just a title, or did you transition more over to the operations side?
My title is actually VP of People Operations. So I'm still squarely within the people function.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you for the correction. Okay.
The only piece that is like, I wouldn't even call it non-traditional, semi-non-traditional, is that I have like office managers and that function, the EAs and the office managers roll into me, but otherwise it's talent, core HR, and then that EA function.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Hey, Nora, you mentioned one thing in what you were just talking about, that you were the first hire in your current company when the company was about 40. And that's a conversation that we've had a number of times on the podcast, is when and where does that, you know, first hire, if you will, on the people side, when should it happen? Where should it happen? What size company? Because as companies build, I think that's one of the things that they struggle with quite often is, okay, when do we need to bring on someone full time? So what's your thoughts around that, especially having lived through it a few times now?
It really depends on the company. I don't mean for that to be a cop out, but if you're talking about an administrative HR person, you should do that as early as you can afford it, because it can take like a huge mental load off of the leaders, you know, just to know that you're doing things kind of by the book. If we're talking about like a leadership position, and that doesn't have to be VP, it doesn't have to be director, but somebody who's taking on more of a strategic HR function, I think it's when you feel desperately that you need it. Because the founders I've worked with all care very deeply about the culture, and they have a really, really hard time relinquishing the strategy around scaling that culture to someone else, right? And so doing it too early, and I've been through this myself, means that there will be like undue friction. It will be very uncomfortable and it won't be successful. It just won't work. And so that might be early. You might realize as a founder, like, I actually have no capacity to do this and I don't like it, and I want to bring someone on early, which is not to say that my founders here don't like it. I think they just knew that it wasn't a strength of theirs. It wasn't where they wanted to focus, and they wanted somebody they could trust to take that on very early. In other places, it happens later on. You know, it happens, you've already built something. I think the Jamies were like this. They had kind of been going along without somebody in that role for some time because they had confidence and capacity to do it. But they reached a point where they were like, okay, like, we need someone here. So I think it's just recognizing in yourself as a leader, as the CEO or the founder or whomever, that like, I really don't want to do this anymore. Like, this is, it's bigger than me. It's taking up too much of my time. I'm not giving it the attention it deserves. Whatever that like pressure point is, that's when you want to think about bringing in that leader. So you definitely want to feel a little bit of like, ooh, it's like feeling a bit bad.
Yeah, no, that's some great advice, some great feedback. I want to pivot a little bit and just ask you, what are you most curious about right now, especially as it relates to where you are, which is a little bit unique at that intersection between, you know, some leading edge technology and the people role?
I could answer this question like in a couple of ways. I think on a broad scale, obviously, I'm really curious to see how this technology impacts the workforce. I have a deeply rooted belief that it will make things way better. It'll make everybody's work way more interesting. It'll increase our capacity as like humans to build and create and drive impact in the world, because it's going to take away so many of those time-consuming, I think people call them like important but not urgent things that we just like have to do. I see on my own team people's like abilities increasing with the technology that we're building. Things that scared them, white paper syndrome and all of that kind of stuff, it's like slowly dissipating, and I just can't wait to see how that manifests on a larger scale, because I'm seeing it obviously on a one-off basis, but this has to have like massive impact in the world if we deploy it and once people kind of adopt it at a large scale. So there's always that curiosity of like, what is this really going to do? I think on the people front, there's this really interesting collision of three generations. I don't know if this has happened before, but you've got this like, it's not just one or two dominant generations kind of working alongside one another. It's three, and we're soon to be maybe like even four.
Yeah.
Things that motivate, frustrate, challenge, those generations is like wildly different. Their styles of communication, their preferred work methods, like what they need from a workplace differs wildly. And as a people leader and somebody who advises the leadership team on like how exactly to kind of retain these people and in a way that feels consistent and fair and not judgmental, not prescriptive, like, you know, you're Gen Z, you must care about these things. It's been really interesting. I think that the learnings that the different generations offer to one another and the impact of that on the workforce has been really interesting. So like continuing to see that grow and develop is, I guess it's not so much of a curiosity, but it's something like I'm really excited to continue to kind of dive into.
There's so much to unpack there. And there's a couple of things that come to mind, but I'm only going to ask one in the interest of time. And I'm just trying to figure out which one I want to know more about. As it relates to your role in the people world and AI specifically, are you getting any feedback from your employees, let's just say, where people are afraid and uncertain and, you know, they just don't know how to deal with what's coming? Or because you're in that world, are they more open, I guess, to the idea and embrace it more? What's your thoughts on that?
My position right now, and like I have this like constant refrain of strong opinions loosely held. So I'm going to say this really kind of confidently, but I'm going to caveat and say I'm open to changing my mind about this at any moment. I think the fear comes from like a lack of understanding or a lack of knowledge. And so for those of us who are in it every day, we see how these models are being built and trained. We see how they're being deployed. We see the security around them. Like we know the ins and outs. We see their capabilities as well as their limitations. We see the potential. I don't feel that there's like a lot of fear there. I think that there's, with that increased understanding and getting to watch the process, getting to meet the people, like I know the people building our models, you know, I know the people who are overseeing the training of our models. I trust these people. I know how we looked for them as we hired. I know how they're, I understand that stuff, and same with everybody internally. And so I don't see that fear. I think there's like really misplaced fears about, you know, the robots are coming for us type of stuff, but it's just, that's the nature of like newness. That's the nature of like something new coming on and you don't really know. I think because we know a little more in because we're building it, that particular fear doesn't manifest here at all.
Okay. That's a really interesting take on it. And I'm glad that you've got maybe a little bit more of an inside track. And I think to hear what you just said, I think it's reassuring for some people.
Yeah.
Nora, I'm just, as you're answering that question, and I'm sitting here thinking about, we have another business partner, Joe, but it's me, Joe, and Al running the company. And we've got different generations that you were talking about in the business. And when this first came to our attention, we said, hey, here's an AI platform that we have. Go away and play and come back and ask us any questions. And now we've gone down the path of, hey, if you have any great ideas, come to us with a plan that this is something that'll help the business. And there's some award there for you. As business leaders, if we're chatting with you and you're consulting for us, right now we're saying, hey, here's a tool. But I think this is going to evolve into something much more than just a tool. As leaders looking forward, what are the things that we should be looking or maybe opening up for our teams so that we can stay ahead of the curve? If there's anything there that you would share that maybe you're doing inside your own company, just to keep, again, and I go back to those different generations, because we're going to have people who are very excited to jump on anything to do with AI.
Yeah.
And then we're going to have people who are absolutely terrified, like, oh my God, this is too much of a change.
Okay, let me try to answer this, but at the end of it, tell me if I've kind of missed the mark.
Okay.
I'm going to focus like from a people perspective. This is a question that I get a lot when I go to like conferences or when I speak to other people leaders because I work at Cohere. The thing is that I think real adoption of this technology is going to come through partnership with the tech that we already use. So I think that consuming yourself as a people leader with how to deploy ChatGPT effectively internally, like, oh my gosh, are we behind because my team isn't using chat? No, it's okay. Your really tech forward employees are going to use ChatGPT, and you should ensure that you set up guardrails. You should ensure you understand how they use your data to train and just make sure that you're setting up those guardrails. But beyond that, I personally haven't pushed the use beyond sort of like gently encouraging it. Hey, if you find this useful, you should. And frankly, people are using it. My team uses it all the time, every day. They're using our tool and they're using it in the ways that we hope. But I think broader adoption is going to come through, how does this integrate with Bamboo HR, which we interact with every single day? How is this going to interact with Ashby, which we use every single day? How is it going to interact with, like, it's got to get built into the tech that we already use versus trying to shoehorn ways for individuals to use the technology. I think that's one thing. From like a company strategy perspective, we realize that you need to be a little bit more prescriptive in the sales process. So you need to come up with ways that are useful to your buyer and build something that like solves an existing problem that they have. I think HR is just like, we can be like a little bit more difficult to sell to. And so that need for prescription is even greater.
You did answer my question, which, yes, thank you, which was great. I'd like to take it a little bit further and go back again to your company. When we're talking about AI, what are some of the ways that AI is influencing your internal strategies from hiring to onboarding to employee engagement and all the way down that path?
Oh, this one's like a bit harder to answer. It's hard to decouple the fact that we're building, like it feels like it is our strategy. Do you know what I mean? Like, obviously we have a people strategy. Obviously we have a revenue strategy. Like we have all those things, but it's difficult for me to think about how to decouple the fact that we are like building this from our strategy itself. I would say like the big advantage is that notion of like, when you're just a buyer, like not Cohere, you have an existing problem and you're out there looking for a company that solves it. I think the like incredible thing about being at Cohere is that we're working together to say like, oh, hey, HR, what are your problems? And then we're thinking about like, okay, how do we build to solve these? Hey, sales team, what are your problems? And then we can kind of turn internally and like actually build solutions to those. And then we dog food, you know, obviously we use it internally and get to test it and we get to provide that feedback and that input. And again, as a customer, you hope that you're providing feedback and that's being incorporated. But the really cool thing about being at Cohere is that like, it's right there. Like I can just ping, you know, Ivan, who's leading the building of our product and be like, hey, it would be really amazing if it could do X, Y, and Z. And he's like, cool, like noted. I know that he's taking on the feedback.
Nora, I don't know if we said at the beginning of this, anything you say can and will be used against you. I'm going to swing back to something you said earlier on. You said some people say that they're on a rocket ship, but we really are. Like the way that we've grown and how quickly we've expanded and everything. But that in itself has got to present some unique challenges just in how quickly you're growing. So I'm just wondering, you know, when you're building and you're scaling in a company that quickly, what are some of those challenges that you face? And what advice would you have to other companies who are trying to grow and scale quickly as well?
I'm not sure if the problems are that different from the problems any company would have going through scaling, except the magnitude and the speed with which they're happening. So in the past, when we've scaled, it's like we go from like 80 to like 120 in a year. I actually remember this at FreshBooks. I joined when we were 80 people. And by the time I left, almost 4 years later, I don't even think we broke 200. And there were moments where it was like, oh, this is rapid growth. And at Cohere, we have 10x'd in less than 4 years, right? So the same challenges that we were facing back then at FreshBooks, we're still facing here at Cohere. It's just they're happening in a really condensed time frame. And so they're amplified, right? Like they're just really, really big. I think the biggest lessons that we've had are learning to make trade-offs faster. So like understanding what's needed in the moment and what it's going to cost you, being super aware of that and being ready to like pay the price later. I think what I mean is like being really intentional. Like we don't kick the can down the road. We just face things head on. Like, yes, we understand that we're making a concession here in the name of speed, in the name of whatever the case may be. And just knowing, almost like putting it in the calendar that like, okay, I have to fix this next cycle, or I have to fix this in a month, or I have to fix this when this settles down, and just being kind of hyper aware and intentional about those trade-offs.
Would there be some instances where you have said, you know what, we're going to sacrifice growth for whatever? Like this is a situation where we can't give this up. We have to cognizantly say, you know, maybe we need to give up some growth. Maybe we need to just slow down a little bit on this one. Are there some examples of that?
I wouldn't say like on a large scale. The kind of most interesting thing about working at Cohere is the lack of prescription in terms of like leadership style. Aiden leads with a lot of trust and that kind of trickles its way down. And so he's like, okay, I'm going to spend the time picking the right leaders and then I'm going to let them kind of do their thing. And that, again, that does trickle its way down. And so there's definitely been teams where we're like, hey, you're a bit short on headcount. Like you need people to be able to accomplish your goals. And the leaders of those teams would say, yeah, I hear you. You're right. But the time cost of hiring is greater than I'm willing to pay given what's on my plate. And so I'm going to suffer a little bit for now. and I'm going to hold off. And then we're going to kind of scramble and do the hiring in the future. We've made those trade-offs. I think we try not to make them often. We try to augment. So if it's like, hey, I don't have the capacity, it's like, is there anybody else that we can tap into the interview process? Do you need another recruiter on this to kind of build pipeline? Like, what can we do to sort of help you along? But at the same time, like, we've definitely had that where a leader says like, hey, I just don't have the capacity to add, to not just hire, but onboard, you know, manage and all of that.
Yeah, makes sense.
It's always fun talking about business, but it's more fun talking about people and getting to know them. So here's two questions I'm going to throw at you just to get our audience to get to know you better.
Okay.
Something outside of work that you do for fun. What is it? Something you enjoy.
This is like a really random thing. My husband, a few years ago, got into racing his car.
What kind of racing?
Like going on a track with your car.
Yeah.
And racing your car.
Oh, what tracks are we going to? Are you going to Shannonville? Are we going to Mossport? Where are we going?
Mossport, yeah. So we're part of a group called Infinite Motorsports that does 6 sessions a summer at Mossport. And maybe 2 years ago or 3 years ago now, I started going with him. And that is something that I like love doing in the warmer months.
See?
Very cool.
Never would have guessed. That's amazing. We'll talk after because my brother used to race in Mossport and Shannonville and all these places. Lots of fun. And let's see, we're at Friday. Next Wednesday, you can hop a flight with whoever you want. Where are you going? Favorite destination or somewhere that you would love to go or have been or would love to go again?
I'll give you 2 answers. Somewhere I would love to go again is Scotland. We like are obsessed. We would do just weeks in the Highlands, hiking, hunting, like whatever out there. If it was next Wednesday, that's where I would go.
And the Highlands, I have to ask you, did you see any Hailey Coos while you were there?
No.
No? I say it as a Scottish accent. It's their Highland cows, the hairy cows. But I pronounce it, of course, like my dad would have, Hailey Coo.
No, you know, we saw very little
okay. of that. Okay, so what's the second spot?
Japan. That's been kind of on our bucket list of like, we gotta go too. Soon. I'm turning 40 soon. Not yet, but soon. And we're like, oh, maybe that's like my 40th trip. At the same time, my daughters are 6 and 4. And I would love to take them, but maybe when they're just like a little bit older. So we're debating like, do we twice? Do we wait till they're older? Definitely on our list of like, spend 3 weeks just traveling through, eating our way through Japan would be incredible.
I am so on board with you with that. That is on my bucket list. I'm trying to make it happen within the next 2 years. So I'm hoping. We have a good friend. He's been on the podcast before. He's a friend. He's been going to Japan, I think, for about 18 years. So if you ever need some tips, I can put you in touch with him. Well, this has been fantastic. I always look back on how I met people. And for you, I saw you on a panel. I thought you were so engaging on the panel. I thought, okay, I'm going to take a chance here and walk up to this person, you know, rather nervously and ask them if they'd consider being on the podcast. I'm so glad I did because this is a fantastic conversation. But we've arrived at the point in the podcast that is my favorite. Everybody knows that. Al's signature question. And if you're okay with it, would love to turn it over to Al to throw that question at you.
All right, let's do it.
Wonderful. A society grows great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. So can you talk about any of those proverbial trees you might be planting? Could be the future of work around AI, leadership, personal, whatever you want to explore with us.
Okay, I genuinely did not prepare an answer for this. So I'm just going to like speak from the heart-ish.
Those are some of the best.
Yeah, mine would definitely be personal. I wasn't somebody who like grew up wanting children. It wasn't something I like dreamed of. And even when I got married, it wasn't something that we had like actively talked about. But eventually we felt like, yeah, we actually want to build a family together. Like, I don't know if it was so much about specifically having kids as much as it was like, it'd be cool to have a family. And now that I have daughters and of course cannot imagine my life without these incredible girls and all the things they teach me, this like notion of building trees has become something of an obsession, even when you don't realize what seeds you're planting, because you have these like little ones that are going to sit in their shade. Like, you'd better plant the right seeds because they are going to sit in the shade of them. And so thinking about the type of, and I have no idea if this is the intention of the question, but it's really around the types of women I want them to be, the way I want them to experience the world and the possibilities that are in front of them. So on the one hand, I think it's like lessons that you teach them and living by example, letting them see, you know, investment in yourself, investment in each other, the notion of family and loyalty. And like a constant refrain in our household is like, you only got each other. And this is it. You got to invest in your family because this is really at the end of the day, all you have. But it's also about accepting that I can only make small changes and hoping that if enough of us make those small changes, they'll lead to something bigger. I'm in a people role. So things like, I never want women to feel like they have to compromise to have a family. I want them to feel like they can not miss a beat. If they choose to have a family and a career, you can have both. And there's like ways that companies will support you through that. Really trying to understand, like, beyond paid parental leave, what does that actually look like? What does it really look like to invest in your birthing parents and things like that? Finding ways to facilitate like job changes, being creative in the ways that we think about what is deserving of payment, you know, asking for what you want out of your work and kind of, yeah, just being confident in being able to like go after that. So yeah, just trying to facilitate those changes in my company, which feels at times small, even though, you know, we're not that small. And hoping that if enough leaders are, and there are people like leading the way on this, like not to name drop, but Avery Francis, who's running Bloom, is like incredible. She's so thoughtful. She's so philosophical about the world and work and what it means for minorities, including women. So there's lots of people doing it. I guess I'm hopeful that if enough of us plant the right trees, there will be like good shade for the kids.
Well, for someone who didn't give that a lot of thought beforehand, your answer was brilliant. And as you were speaking about specifically when you said you didn't want women to think they had to compromise their career to raise a family or whatever, I was reminded in my head of some great words that I heard one time, which was, embrace the power of and, reject the tyranny of or. So it reminded me, like, you can have a successful career and raise a family, not that you have to make a choice between one or the other.
Yeah.
So thank you for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nora, this has been incredible. Every conversation, we've had three now, and they keep getting better. So I'm looking forward to our future conversations, whether we record them or not. Really looking forward to that. Thank you for doing this. I really appreciate it. For listeners who want to find out more about what you're doing at Cohere, what's the best way for them to reach out?
Yeah, probably LinkedIn. My name is Nora Beattie on LinkedIn. You can find me there.
All right, perfect. Well, that does it for today's episode. We really enjoyed this conversation. As always, hope you did too. If you have any questions for Al or myself, please feel free to give us a call or join the conversation on LinkedIn. We saw it here yet again. Success leaves clues, my friends. We'll see you next time.